What up, everyone? Welcome back to Movies Chat. My name is Eric Davis, and this episode we're going to be talking about Moonrise Kingdom, the new Wes Anderson film. It comes out in limited release this weekend. We'll also be ranking the Wes Anderson movies to let you know where exactly Moonrise Kingdom fits into his stable of quirky shtick. Joining me is Matt Patches. Matt is a movies editor of Hollywood.com. He's also the co-host of the movie-centric podcast Operation Kino. I shouldn't say the co-host. You're a co-host because you have several people on that.
That's true.
What's up, Matt? How are you?
A big happy family. I'm well. Thank you very much for having me today. I appreciate it.
I'm glad you're here. We both saw Moonrise Kingdom. We were in the same screening. You sat.
I know. Lots of snuggling. Oh, right. Yeah.
You actually sat right in front of me, but I left and we never got to talk about the film. I ran out. I had to go do something. I didn't see you afterwards. So I said, let's have Matt come on.
And movie chat it up.
We'll movies chat Moonrise Kingdom. So let's talk about Moonrise Kingdom first, and then we'll get into our personal rankings of the Wes Anderson movies. What did you think?
I was actually surprised that I enjoyed it quite a bit. You know, as you will find out when we start ranking them, I haven't been a big fan of Wes Anderson's. It's kind of been a slow decline for me. But Moonrise Kingdom felt like the right coalescing of all of his stylistic attributions and his choices in heightening realism with dialogue and characters. And it just made sense to me. Like, it all kind of clicked. And I think what helped and what I liked most about it is that it was about young people.
Yeah.
And Wes Anderson's movies, to me, have always been about a kind of younger perspective and the whimsy of the world when you're a youthful person. And by having actual kids in the movie, I think all of that style really made sense.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a lot of his typical traits in here. You have the dysfunctional family. You have obsessive love. You have rescue missions. I always feel like Wes Anderson is at his best when he has a rescue mission in his films. A lot of his films have rescue missions, but nobody quite does the rescue mission like Wes Anderson does the rescue mission. And the rescue mission in this film is very fun to watch as well.
Well, yeah, and the other thing that I really like about it is that he's a very theatrical person, and the movie employs this opera, Noah's Flood, as its score, and it even has sequences of the opera in the film, and the movie itself is very theatrical. It uses animation, kind of like Fantastic Mr. Fox, yeah. And it uses, you know, the style that we're kind of accustomed to with Wes Anderson, the straight-on framing of things and the rigid camera movements. That's all very aware of the craft, but that made a lot more sense when he pushed it to another. Like, it is theater in some capacities, and by having these kind of amateur actors, he points that out more in an effective way.
Yeah, I actually think the amateur actors are the best part of his ensemble here, which is interesting. I think people have compared Wes Anderson's films to being like living storybooks. It's this film is literally a living storybook, and I think I like the different versions of love on display here. There's definitely a theme, you know, how it takes several moving parts sometimes to come together at the right time to accomplish a goal. But my problems that I had with it at times were that I just didn't get to know the characters as well as I wanted to. I felt like they were a little hollow. I felt like Bruce Willis's character didn't really fit Anderson's sensibilities. I liked Edward Norton's character, but I just felt like he sets him up and then doesn't really pay him off in any kind of way. And the same goes for Bill Murray at times, too. He doesn't really – and Frances McDormand, they don't really do anything except for be the concerned parents. And he gives them this little shtick where they're lawyers and they talk to each other in lawyer speak, but that's about it.
There's probably too many characters in this movie, and it's been a problem for him in the past, I think, that these like overcrowded ensembles. The best part of the movie is when it ends up being just the two kids kind of going off on their adventure, this boy and this girl who have fallen in love, and there's this long stretch of the movie where they're kind of just on a beach, and that's the most wonderful part of the movie to me, because it's just the two of them talking and being realistic, even though they're kind of a quirky bunch, a couple. They're weird kids, which I can obviously identify with.
Yeah.
But they're the sweetest part of the movie. They're the real heart. And all the other characters are very hollow and cold, and it's very much – it seems like it's written for the jokes sometimes,
yeah.
Which is when it kind of falls to the wayside. So it is a little hard to get into, but I think when it's just about the kids, that's its strongest suit.
I agree. And, you know, with Wes Anderson films, I'm a big Wes Anderson film, and I like to watch his films multiple times. I feel like, he's one of those directors where you really see little things that he puts in there the more you watch his films. So I look forward to watching this more, especially when it hits Blu-ray and cable, to discover more of what he put in there.
The photography is amazing. I can't wait to see it on Blu-ray. I can't wait to like look through screen caps of this.
It's beautiful. but yeah, so we both liked it. It has some faults, but if you're a Wes Anderson film and you like his movies and you like what he's trying to accomplish, I don't think you'll be disappointed here. Am I right?
I would agree with you. I think that if you've ever felt kind of burned or overdosed on Wes Anderson's style, this is a good way to get back into it because it all makes sense.
Cool. Okay, so now let's move on. We're going to rank the Wes Anderson movies now. Now, before we begin, I just wanted to let everybody know that we're not including the short Hotel Chevalier. I never know how to pronounce
it. Chevalier.
We're not including that in here. We'll use that as an extension of the Darjeeling Limited. So the films that we're ranking are The Royal Tenenbaums, Rushmore, Bottle Rocket, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Life Aquatic, The Darjeeling Limited, and Moonrise Kingdom. Matt, why don't you tell me your ranking, and then I will tell you mine.
Well, I will first admit that I've never seen Fantastic Mr. Fox all the way through, which you've already shamed me for off air.
I have.
And which many of my colleagues say is one of their favorites. So I really absolutely need – I even own it on Blu-ray, which is the sad part. And I love animation. But for my lowest entry on my list, I'm going to have to say The Darjeeling Limited, which I've seen once in theaters, have never returned to, and it just felt like an overdose for me. I kind of – it was so enamored by its own craft, I could not – enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then, wait, do you want my whole list?
I want your whole list, yeah.
Oh my God, here, okay. then I'm going to go, for me, number five is going to be The Life Aquatic, which is thrilling, but a little cold and lifeless as well. Then I'm going to go with Moonrise Kingdom, which starts winning me back with its theatrics. And then number three, I'm going to go Bottle Rocket, which I really would be interested to see Wes Anderson try a movie like this again, where it's like so grounded in reality. Just the adventure is a little bit heightened.
I
love that it's I can understand why Scorsese loved it. Mm-hmm. And number two is Rushmore, which I think is universally treasured by many. But I have to put The Royal Tenenbaums as number one. And I've seen a lot of people kind of chastise this movie in the wake of seeing Moonrise Kingdom for some reason. I didn't realize it was so polarizing for people. I really love it. I think this is where the ensemble just makes perfect sense. The family aspects, the design elements of the house. The house itself is a character in the ensemble. I was just so caught up with this movie. And kind of looking back, I feel like everybody my age in college, it was like required viewing. So I don't know if I was just kind of wrapped up in this movie, the phenomenon of this film at the time. But I just treasure it.
No, I completely agree. I know that polarizing. People don't like this movie, and then people love this movie.
I wonder. I don't know why it rubs people the wrong way. I guess because it never gets too deep into any one thing. But I feel like each character is an examination of the main Tenenbaum. I cannot remember his name. Oh my God, Royal Tenenbaum.
Yep.
And I feel like each one is kind of a reflection of how he has worked through the world and how he's unfolded people into and used his perspective on things. And I just find a fascinating dissection of him as a character. So I could get into Royal Tenenbaum.
And it's interesting too how you say how you compare it to Moonrise Kingdom, because I think Royal Tenenbaum gets right what Moonrise Kingdom may have gotten wrong in terms of giving all of those characters. You get to know them. It's a big ensemble, but you really get to know each of those characters and the house. I mean, he also tries to kind of make the house a character in Moonrise Kingdom too, and it's fun, and I like what he's doing there, but you don't feel it in the sense that you feel it with Royal Tenenbaums.
I also – what I think is interesting about Moonrise and Royal Tenenbaums and why I do like Moonrise Kingdom is that these actors that he's gotten to play the supporting characters are kind of outside of his wheelhouse, like Ed Norton and Frances McDormand. Mm-hmm. They bring this grounded – performing style to his heightened world and balance things out. I think that's my problem with Darjeeling. It kind of overloads on like Jason Schwartzman and Owen Wilson, and it's too much. They understand what he's going for too much. And Royal Tenenbaums balances out in a perfect way.
I agree with you. I just wish that I knew the Bruce Willis and Edward Norton's characters more. I felt I wish he paid things off in ways that, because he sets up stuff, but he just doesn't really pay it off in a way that resonated with me at least.
Yeah.
So okay, let me go. I'm going to last on my list is Moonrise Kingdom, and the reason why Moonrise Kingdom is last on my list is because I've only seen it once, and I've seen all of these other films several times, and I just feel like I'm not being fair to the stable of work by sticking it in there because I haven't seen it as much as, and I haven't been able to dissect it as much as these other films, so that's why it's just.
But it has the potential to move up the ladder.
It definitely has the potential, and if we have this conversation next year at this time after I've watched it another couple of times, it definitely has the potential to move up the ladder.
I'm penciling it in
at least ahead of this next film, which for me is the Darjeeling Limited. I agree with you a lot, and it's sad because I really feel like Anderson is at his best when both Owen Wilson and Jason Schwartzman are involved in one of his films, but this one just felt a bit flat to me. Again, I just didn't like the characters as much. I didn't feel like there was great chemistry between the three of them, and there wasn't much to invest in story-wise for me. And I don't know if that has to do with Roman Coppola as his co-writer. Just to give you a little facts about Wes Anderson, he's worked with three different co-writers. Roman Coppola on Darjeeling and Moonrise, Noah Baumbach on Life Aquatic and Fantastic Mr. Fox, and Owen Wilson on Rushmore, Tenenbaums, and Bottle Rocket. So I haven't really been into the Roman Coppola films, to be honest with you. I don't know if – I don't know what he's adding, so I don't want to – it's not fair to kind of blame him because I don't know what he's adding to these films. But I am personally more drawn to the films that he worked with Noah Baumbach and Owen Wilson.
Are you a CQ fan?
No.
Done.
So I don't know. I don't want to bash Roman Coppola. He's helped out. He's been second unit on some of these films, and he's helped out Anderson tremendously, I'm sure. But I there's just something missing in the writing on Moonrise Kingdom and Darjeeling Limited that isn't really missing in some of these other films, for me at least. And I'm curious because I've heard that his next film, he's going to work with Owen Wilson again, and I'm really crossing my fingers that Owen Wilson is co-writing the film with him because I not to give away the rest of my list, but my three favorite films were co-written by Owen Wilson. So let's move on. After the Darjeeling Limited, for me, it's Life Aquatic. This is the Bill Murray show. So if you like Bill Murray and if you like Bill Murray in Wes Anderson films, the Life Aquatic is great. I love the fantastical underwater sequences. There's also a lot of characters and a lot of moving parts to invest in, perhaps a little too many. But it's really fun, and it also has a really fun rescue mission. If you haven't been able to tell,
love that scene, love the action stuff in that movie.
Yes, yes. Oddly enough. Like I said, Wes Anderson likes rescue missions, and and he loves plotting out his rescue missions, and they are so much fun to watch in his films. After the Life Aquatic, for me, it's Fantastic Mr. Fox. It's light, it's breezy, it's accessible. It's really fun watching Anderson's unique aesthetic applied to a children's film. Essentially a children's film, although if you're a Wes Anderson film fan, you'll like this film a lot. George Clooney, really, he's done kind of the quirky before. He's been in a lot of Coen. He's been in Coen Brothers movies. He really kind of gets, I think, Anderson's vibe, and he does a really great job. And it's a really fun film to watch. After Fantastic Mr. Fox is Rushmore at number three. All the actors that have worked with Anderson, I think Bill Murray and Jason Schwartzman have done the best job of truly owning Anderson's characters. I think Jason Schwartzman steals Moonrise Kingdom in the brief moments he's in it, and to watch them opposite each other in this film feuding over a girl is really great. I think it's impossible not to love this film. I think it's illegal to not like this film. I seriously, who doesn't love it? After Rushmore, for me, it's Royal Tenenbaums. Number two is Anderson's best dysfunctional family movie. We talked about it a little bit before. Another reason why I love it is because it's the best of Gene Hackman's last performances.
Oh, I know.
I miss Gene Hackman, and if you want to watch, his last great performance, I think this is it.
He's so funny in this movie.
Oh, he's so great in this film, and he really, really gets it. And he's just really fun to watch. And Ben Stiller with his afro and his kids that have the afros are really fun fun to watch as well. And we discussed it before why we really like that one. So number one for me is Bottle Rocket. This is the first Wes Anderson film that I personally discovered. It's the one that I fell in love with Anderson as a director on. And I was going to actually bring up the point, too. This is Wes Anderson before he became too Wes Anderson-y. Dignan is my all-time favorite Wes Anderson character. I'm a big fan of hyper-neurotic characters, I think, because I come from a hyper-neurotic family. And here it's just Owen Wilson really owns this film. Another great rescue mission to start off the film, where they're rescuing him from a voluntary mental hospital. And it really kind of sets up Anderson's humor for his entire career. And I think the Wilson brothers play off each other really well here. And it really, really spoke to me. I also remember when Bottle Rocket kind of came out, I remember people talking before, you know, movie websites were really big, but people were really excited that it was based on a short. And me and my friends were like, he made a short film and then they bought it and gave him money to make a whole film. It was like this crazy idea. Yeah, it was this crazy idea. And then I remember my friends and I, frantically searching. The internet wasn't like it is now, where everything's on YouTube. And then somebody got this really crappy copy of it, and my friends were like, I have a copy of the short that he made to get Bottle Rocket made. And it was just so exciting, and my friend and I really bonded over this film. And I think to a certain degree there's some nostalgia at play here, why it's my favorite Wes Anderson film, but it really is the one that brought me into his quirky world and made me fall in love.
I don't think it's nostalgia driving your love for Bottle Rocket. I saw glimpses of Bottle Rocket in Life Aquatic, I think. There's a middle ground between what Wes Anderson does that really can annoy people, or the stylistic edge that he has, and what he does care about characters. He does care about reality, I think. And Bottle Rocket is an example of that. And Life Aquatic kind of teeters in the wrong direction. I think it could have gone the Bottle Rocket route and it would have been interesting. And I don't know if he'll ever go back to the Bottle Rocket style of being really naturalistic, but I would like to see it maybe.
So would I. I would like to see it. I think he's at his best when obsessive love is in the equation, when there's a dysfunctional family in the equation, and when there's a heist or a rescue mission involved. Those are explains a lot of his films, but that's when he really is at his best. That's when my favorite time to watch him, Wes Anderson, and just let these crazy characters that he created go to town. And so that's it right there. So run through your list fast, and I'll run through mine, and then we'll part ways.
Yes. So number six, Darjeeling Limited. Number five, The Life Aquatic. Number four, Moonrise Kingdom. Number three, Bottle Rocket. Number two, Rushmore. Number one, the much polarizing Royal Tenenbaums.
Number six for me is Moonrise Kingdom, because I just haven't seen it yet, because I haven't seen it enough. Then we have the Darjeeling Limited. Number four, Life Aquatic. Four.
I think you have seven, actually.
I do. Fantastic Mr. Fox, Rushmore, The Royal Tenenbaums, and number one for me is Bottle Rocket. Matt, what are you working on right now, professionally or personally, that you're excited about?
Sure. Well, every day I'm posting at Hollywood.com musings about movies. Operation Kino is every Friday. You can find it on iTunes, and that's a really fun conversation with a good group of people. And I have a second podcast that's hyper-specific. So if you are a fan of The Last Airbender or the new show, The Legend of Korra, prepare to nerd out with my other podcast, Republic City Dispatch, which you can also find on iTunes and Tumblr.
Cool. Cool. Fun times. Yeah. Matt, thank you so much for joining me. And I hope to have you again on the movies chat.
I cannot wait. Thanks, Eric.
Take care, man.